The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up from HelenKeller.org, Deafblind Awareness Week 2024. What is Deafblind Awareness Week? In recognition of the achievements of people who are deafblind, the Helen Keller National Center for Deafblind Youths and Adults, HKNC, celebrates the last week in June as Deafblind Awareness Week. This year marks the 40th anniversary of this national advocacy campaign, which has been held each year since 1984, when then-President Ronald Reagan issued a proclamation in recognition of this special week. The purpose of Deafblind Awareness Week is to raise public awareness about individuals who have combined hearing and vision loss. In 2024, we will celebrate Helen Keller Deafblind Awareness Week from June 23rd to June 30th. This year's campaign focuses on the diverse journeys and shared aspirations of deafblind individuals and how HKNC partners with them as they navigate life's pathways toward greater independence, meaningful employment, and achieving their personal milestones. Through personalized support and specialized training, HKNC equips deafblind individuals with the skills and confidence needed to overcome barriers and embrace opportunities. Our 2024 poster features a former HKNC participant, Kaylin, K-A-H-L-Y-N, portraying a young graduate, embracing her opportunities as she looks to the future. It underscores that while our journeys may differ, our aspirations unite us. And then there's a photo of the poster with a QR code to the HelenKeller.org website. Poster description. A Deafblind Awareness Week poster showing a woman in a blue graduation cap and gown, smiling into the distance, holding a white cane, and wearing sunglasses. Above her are five illustrated icons representing themes such as becoming a teacher, traveling, starting a family, higher education, and owning a home. Underneath the woman, there are big words that say diverse journeys, shared aspirations. In smaller letters beneath that are words that say, HKNC partners with deafblind individuals as they navigate life's pathways towards greater independence, meaningful employment, and achieving their personal milestones. On the bottom left of the poster is a QR code that goes to HelenKeller.org. On the bottom right of the poster is the Helen Keller National Center for Deafblind Youth and Adults logo. Join us in celebrating Deafblind Awareness Week. Number one, learn about the deafblind community. Being deafblind refers to an individual who has combined hearing and vision loss. At Helen Keller National Center, HKNC, we believe that education is essential to understanding the challenges and celebrating the accomplishments of deafblind individuals. Explore HKNC's many free resources, including a hot link for deafblind culture and guidelines for respectful interactions with deafblind individuals hot link. In our online resource center hot link. Understanding the unique experiences and cultural nuances of deafblind individuals is crucial for fostering inclusive environments. Learning how to approach, communicate, and interact with deafblind individuals ensures that these interactions are respectful and conducive to full and equal participation. These resources, as well as other courses, can be found in our Learning Center hot link. HKNC is the only national agency that provides information, referrals, support, and a comprehensive vocational and rehabilitation program to deafblind youths and adults who have a combined hearing and vision loss. HKNC also provides support to the families and professionals who work with them. Number two, raise awareness online. During Deafblind Awareness Week, we encourage you to raise public awareness about individuals who are deafblind by downloading and sharing our campaign graphic on social media. Use the hashtag DBAW24 and tag at Helen Keller Services. Campaign graphic image description. Pretty much the same as the poster. Number three, learn how to make the internet more accessible. At Helen Keller National Center, HKNC, We believe that everyone is entitled to equal access in digital spaces, and we are committed to promoting digital accessibility for all, making the Internet more accessible for everyone, including those who are deafblind, is a top priority here at HKNC. Are you looking to make your company's website more accessible or simply interested in promoting digital inclusion? Learn strategies and best practices on how to make the Internet more accessible through alternative text on images, using headings on web pages, and providing video transcripts. At HKNC, we believe that digital accessibility is essential to creating a more inclusive and equitable world, and we're here to help you make it happen. There's a hot link to learn how to make a website more accessible. Number four, write to your local legislator. Write to your congressperson, mayor, governor, town supervisor, or other elected official. Ask for a proclamation declaring June 23rd to June 30, 2024 as Deafblind Awareness Week. Number five, host a panel. Consider hosting a panel for deafblind individuals to share their perspectives and journey. Number six, read success stories from individuals who are deafblind. Discover the transformative journeys of numerous deafblind individuals who have acquired invaluable skills, enabling them to enhance their independence, integrate into the workforce, and cultivate self-assurance through their participation in Helen Keller National Center's vocational and rehabilitation programs. Contact us. For further information, contact Helen Keller National Center's Development Project, 141 Middle Neck Road, Sands Point, New York, 11050. Voicemail 516-944-8900, extension 1299. Email hkncinfo@hknc.org. Website www.helenkeller.org/hknc. From nationaldb.org, National Center on Deaf Blindness, for State Deafblind Projects. State Deafblind Projects provide a range of services to improve results for children with deafblindness and their families. They work closely with early intervention and education providers to address the high-intensity educational needs of children who are deafblind and prepare them for a successful transition to adult life, facilitate family involvement in education and transition opportunities, collaborate with OSEP-funded parent training and information centers, conduct activities to increase early identification and referral, promote access to and progress in the general education curriculum and grade-level academic content standards. This section of our website provides information and resources to support the projects within this important work. Quick links, update your project information, implementing evidence-based practices for children who are deafblind, a TA reference guide, providing technical assistance to families, a guide for state deafblind projects, changing systems, moving beyond child-specific technical assistance, monthly update, accessibility toolkit, NCDB and state deafblind project messaging, child count management, access to the general education curriculum. Providing access to the general education curriculum, GEC, is required by law for all students with disabilities. The link below includes resources for state deafblind projects to learn about this important topic and what they can do to help families and educators provide access to the GEC for students who are deafblind. Hot link to learn more about access to GEC. Ongoing support for from NCDB. NCDB's primary role is to provide assistance to state projects to help them conduct their project activities. Our services include technical assistance, TA, and tools to support child-specific systems, TA. Child-specific TA refers to the work projects to do with educational teams and families regarding specific children. Systems TA refers to activities to create or improve state and local services to better meet the needs of children who are deafblind and their families. Read the most recent evaluations of our services conducted by an external evaluator. 2023 report, annual survey, 2023 NCDB report, a state deafblind project interview findings. The NC stands for National Center, not for North Carolina. So the next link I'm going to read you is from the National DB about North Carolina. North Carolina Project for Children and Young Adults Who Are Deafblind. Phone 919-807-3690. Fax 919-807-3243. Hot links to go to the website and to go to the project list. The snail mail address is the Exceptional Children Division of NC, Department of Public Schools, 6356 Mail Service Center, Raleigh, NC, 27699-6356. Project staff, Alan Chase, Project Contact, Project Director, 984-236-2582, email alan.chase@dpi.nc.gov. Virginia Matterin, Project Co-Director, 984-236-2307. Virginia.madorin@dpi.nc.gov. Brittany Cutshaw, Project Co-Director, 828-808-9553. Email bcutshaw@ecacmail.org. Sandra Warren, Project Co-Director, 252-328-2699. Email warrens@ecu.edu. Andrea Blackwood, Teacher Support Program Technical Assistance Coordinator, 252-328-1140. Email blackwooda@ecu.edu. Louise Tripoli, OSEP Project Officer. Email louise.tripoli@ed.gov. Nancy Giurato, G-I-U-R-A-T-O, Family Engagement Coordinator, 980-326-5082. Email ngiurato@ecacmail.org. National Center on Deaf Blindness contact information, 1-516-366-0047. Email support@nationaldb.org. National Center on Deaf Blindness is at the Helen Keller National Center, 141 Middle Neck Road, Sands Point, New York, 11050. Professional Development Concentration in Deaf Blindness Course. An exciting professional development opportunity is available through a collaboration with the University of South Dakota and the South Dakota Deafblind Project. During the fall of 2024, they will be offering an Introduction to Deafblindness and Deafblindness Assessment and Instructional Planning. The courses will run from August 19th through December 6, 2024. Each course includes 14-week semester, August to December, approximately 3 hours of online work per week, access to high-speed internet required, synchronous online meetings throughout the semester. Course must meet 16 participants minimum in order to be held. Cost $450 per 3-credit course. There's a hot link to learn more. Division for Early Childhood's Conference. Division for Early Childhood's 40th Annual International Conference on Young Children with Disabilities and Their Families will focus on the future of inclusive practices, creating equitable access, participation, and supports. This 3-day event, plus optional pre-conference workshops, is packed with sessions presented by experts in the field and opportunities to connect with fellow attendees who are passionate about early childhood, early intervention, and early childhood special education. DEC attendees include practitioners, researchers, family members, students, and professionals from around the globe. Hot link to visit the DEC website to learn more. Here is a repeat of an article I read in 2022 from TheNewYorker.com. Deafblind communities may be creating a new language of touch. ProTactile began as a movement for autonomy and a system of tactile communication. Now, some linguists argue, it is becoming a language of its own. The article was by Andrew Leland. When John Lee Clark was 5 years old in 1983, he entered a small deaf program within a public school near his home in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Clark was a dreamy kid who dressed in tucked-in button-downs and pressed slacks. He came from a large deaf family. His father and brother are deaf-blind. His mother and sister are deaf and sighted. And the family had communicated in American Sign Language, ASL, for generations. On Clark's first day of kindergarten, his mother, worried, followed his school bus in her car. When she surprised him at school to ask if he was okay, Clark said that he was fine, but that the bus driver had forgotten how to speak. His mother laughed and reminded him that the driver didn't know how to speak. She was hearing. This is a common story among deaf families, Clark told me here recently. The gradual dawning that all those mutes could actually talk with one another, but in a very different way. In third grade, Clark began a bilingual deaf program. Instruction was in ASL, but students were grouped on the basis of their ability to read English, a second language that Clark accessed only in print. My literacy was abysmal, he said. He still has a workbook from that time in which he answered questions. What is your favorite sport? Who are the members of your family? With drawings instead of in English. But he was gifted in ASL, and teachers would ask him for help with tricky words. He sometimes pranked them by inventing ostentatiously elaborate versions. The word heaven is difficult for ASL learners, involving a precise looping of the hands. Clark added several gratuitous loops. At 12, Clark began attending a residential deaf school, many of whose students came from deaf families. But around this time, he began to go blind. Hundreds of thousands of people in the U.S. have some combined hearing and vision loss, but most are elder adults and have spent the bulk of their lives hearing and sighted. A much smaller group, about 10,000 according to some estimates, become deafblind earlier in life. A leading genetic cause is Usher syndrome. Clark, his father, and his brother have Usher, which can cause a person to be born deaf and to gradually go blind. At 14, Clark started to lose track of ASL conversations. I was this boy who always said, "Say again," who might collide into you, Clark told me. So pathetic. He began reading in Braille, which his father had encouraged him to learn as a child, and started walking with a white cane. In high school, Clark stopped trying to follow ASL visually and began using tactile reception, feeling words with his hands. This helped, but miscommunication was common. ASL is a fundamentally visual language. The dominant hand gestures for the words stamp and fun, for instance, look very similar, except that stamp begins near the mouth, whereas fun starts at the nose. Yes or no questions are signified with raised eyebrows, and sentences can be negated with a shake of the head. When Clark would reply in ASL, he'd have no idea how a person was responding or whether they were still paying attention at all. He said that it was like talking to a wall. He attended Gallaudet, a deaf university in Washington, D.C., with his future partner, Adrian, a sighted deaf artist. It was really when I got married that I noticed more serious problems, he told me. He would come home from the store without the items that Adrian had requested and misunderstood the timing of their appointments. It'd blow up on me how that information in ASL had failed to register. On September 11, 2001, Clark went to a literature class at the University of Minnesota, where he was working toward his bachelor's degree. When he arrived, his interpreters made the handshake for airplane and ran it into a raised finger twice. Clark interpreted this as an airplane hitting two poles and assumed that he was hearing about a local news story, perhaps about a hobbyist in a prop plane hitting telephone wires. It wasn't until he got home that he learned how much he must have missed. The tear-streaked faces, the TV footage running on loop. I heard some remarkably similar stories about 9/11 and other cataclysmic news events from several deaf-blind people. In 2013, Clark attended a training in Minneapolis in ProTactile, a new movement that was encouraging deaf-blind people to reject the stigma in American culture against touch, which often leaves them cut off from the world around them. According to ProTactile's principles, rather than waiting for an interpreter to tell her about the apples available at the grocery store, a deaf-blind person should plunge her hands into the produce bins. If a sighted friend pulls out her phone in the middle of a conversation to check a weather alert, she should bring her deafblind interlocutor's hand to her pocket as well to understand where the weather forecast is coming from. ProTactile includes a set of practices to make tactile communications more legible. One of its creators, a deafblind woman named Jelica Nuccio, J-E-L-I-C-A-N-U-C-C-I-O, showed Clark how it worked. They sat facing each other, their legs touching, and Nuccio rested Clark's hand on her knee, explaining that as she spoke, he should tap to indicate that he understood, like nodding, a practice called back channeling. Nuccio articulated words into Clark's hand, but also directly onto his arms, back, chest, and lower thighs. In ASL, pronouns are articulated as points in space. You might designate Minneapolis as a point in the air near your left shoulder, and Seattle as a spot near your right. And then those gestures stand in for the cities. Nuccio showed Clark how to indicate them as points on the body instead, a two-fingered press on each shoulder. I didn't feel like a lightning bolt moment, Clark told me. It was all too natural. But after the training, he noticed changes in his household. He and Adrian began using a ProTactile principle called co-presence. If she came into a room, she would brush him to let him know that she was there. Before, they'd sat around the table, and whoever sat next to Clark interpreted what the rest of the family said. Afterward, they began eating in informal clusters, allowing for tactile group conversations. In the years since, ProTactile has spread across the country. Today, most deafblind adults have heard of ProTactile's call to place touch at the center of their lives. Clark, who has become a leader in the movement, compared it to the Deaf Pride movement of the 1980s, when more deaf people began speaking ASL in public, insisting that hearing people gesture back. A few hundred people use ProTactile's communication practices daily, a very small group. Still, several linguists have come to believe that among some of its frequent users, ProTactile is developing into its own language, with words and grammatical structures that have diverged from those of ASL. I am totally convinced that this is no tweak of ASL. Diane Brentari, B-R-E-N-T-A-R-I, one of the premier linguists of sign language who teaches at the University of Chicago, told me. This is a new language. Clark believes that ProTactile has the potential to upend centuries of deafblind isolation. It's an exciting time to be deafblind, he has written. The single most important development in deafblind history is in full swing. I met Clark in an old stone building that houses some of the University of Chicago's linguistics labs. Clark is tall with a youthful face. He lives with his partner and their three children who are hearing and sighted in St. Paul. He writes poems that are published regularly in Poetry Magazine. He won a National Magazine Award in 2020 for a piece on tactile art and has both a poetry collection and a book of essays forthcoming from Norton. When we met, I was struck by the similarity between his presence in person and the way he comes across over email. In both, he is affectionately didactic. I had assumed that he would speak through my interpreter, but he insisted that he address me directly while she watched and translated, so that I could feel the experience of ProTactile. I have a condition called retinitis pigmentosa, the visual component of Usher syndrome, which is causing me to slowly go to blind. My hearing is unaffected. As Clark and I faced each other, our white canes leaning in a corner of the room, he kneaded my shoulders and instantly found my baseball cap, which I use as a sort of cane for my face. It saves me from slamming my head into open cabinet doors. Lots of people with Usher syndrome and RP will use these kinds of caps, Clark said. He playfully pulled it off my head and pressed it to my chest. If you want to up your game in ProTactile, he said, then what you're going to need to do is get rid of that cap and get your hands busy. The title of Clark's new poetry collection, How to Communicate, captures what has always been the central problem for deafblind people. Deafblind children living in linguistic isolation can spontaneously develop home signs that their immediate families understand. Laura Bridgman, B-R-I-D-G-M-A-N, who lost her sight and hearing in scarlet fever in the 1830s in New Hampshire, had signs for her father, her hand drawn across her cheeks describing his whiskers, and spinning wheel, a rotating hand. But without a wider community, home signs can't grow into full languages. In 1837, the educator Samuel Gridley Howe recruited Bridgman to attend what would later be called Perkins, the first American school for the blind in Massachusetts. Howe had previously visited Hartford's American Asylum for the Deaf and Dumb, an incubator for what would soon emerge as American Sign Language, but dismissed signing as little more than pantomime. Instead, he and others at Perkins taught Bridgman to read and write English, using raised letters, which she quickly mastered. He relentlessly publicized this achievement, and Bridgman became an international celebrity. 40 years later, Helen Keller's mother read Charles Dickens' account of meeting with Bridgman and reached out to Perkins, which sent a recent graduate, Annie Sullivan, to educate Keller. Sullivan fingerspelled English words into Keller's hands, hoping that she would slowly pick up the language the way infants pick up spoken language. The story of Keller's breakthrough as her teacher placed her hand under the stream of water while fingerspelling W-A-T-E-R into the other is a canonical scene in American history. There's a bronze statue of Keller at the water pump in the U.S. Capitol, and the moment was immortalized in the 1962 film The Miracle Worker. The miracle is Sullivan's feat of bringing language to a deafblind person, someone understood to be, as Howe described Bridgman, consigned to the darkness and silence of the tomb. Clark has no patience for this sacred image of Keller's deafblind epiphany. There was already a word for water, he said. Keller had developed dozens of home signs with her family before Sullivan arrived, for words such as ice cream, pretending to turn the crank of the freezer, then shivering, and bread. I would imitate the acts of cutting the slices and buttering them, Keller wrote. What Helen learned to do was perform a stunt. Clark has written, Annie was attempting the equivalent of forcing Helen Keller to utter a pentasyllabic word whenever she wanted water. If you're thirsty, say ideology or specification or liability. In Keller's lifetime, other methods of deafblind communication arose. In public, Keller used the Tadoma method, T-A-D-O-M-A, in which she placed a thumb on the throat of her interlocutor and the rest of her fingers across that person's lips and jaw, a kind of tactile lip reading. There were several variations on an alphabet glove printed with English letters so that a sighted person could tap out a message, but communicating letter by letter was cumbersome and slow. Today, some deafblind people communicate orally, many using hearing aids or cochlear implants, which usually offer only partial access to speech. Tactile sign language is also used, but issues with intelligibility remain. A 1995 study found that deafblind people understand as little as 60% of a sentence conveyed through tactile sign language. Various systems have been devised to improve tactile communication. In the 1990s, Trine-Nace, T-R-I-N-E, and the A-E combined letter, S-S, a deafblind Norwegian woman, standardized haptics, a system of touch signals for common words, 11 for colors, 8 for drinks. For a time, some people were like, do you support haptics or PT? Clark told me, but you really cannot compare the two. It's not a Pepsi versus Coke situation, but Pepsi versus Cadillac. In 2005, Jelica Nuzio took over as the first deafblind director of Seattle's Deafblind Service Center, DBSC, which offered social services to about 100 people in the region. 30 years earlier, a nonprofit called the Seattle Lighthouse for the Blind had established a program that employed deafblind people to do industrial work, and in the decades since, the city had become a kind of deafblind mecca. I'm out of time. I hope you enjoyed this week's Vision News on Doris Hyde Reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next week.